welcome to working with difficult people. I'm assuming that none of you guys are difficult. I am Amy Cooper Hakeem, the thought panel leader, and I'm joined by a tremendous panel, and I'd like to share their bios right now. So first, to my left is Alice Rutkowski. She is vice president at Sagen, where she serves nationally as executive communications coach. She joined Sagen with more than 30 years of experience in both the corporate world and consulting practices. She's known for specialized nonverbal communication coaching that sets her apart in the field of executive communications, with expertise in advising senior level executives across industries and venues. She has coached thousands of executives, sales professionals, and customer service agents. Previously, Alice served as a master coach at a highly regarded New York communications firm. She's also consulted and coached at numerous global asset firms, airlines, media, entertainment, and high-end customer service organizations. She was recruited to the business sector after serving as principal advisor in several master's and doctoral degree programs. Recently a published author, Alice wrote about her travel experiences in Exit 8A, Tales of a New York Commuter, published by Next Century Publishing. Alice is a highly sought after presenter known for her warmth and humor, which reveal just how much she loves people. Welcome, Alice. Next, we have Celeste Warren. Celeste is in the center. Celeste is Vice President, Human Resources and Global Diversity and Inclusion Center of Excellence with Merck. In this dual role, she has responsibility for the strategic and operational HR support of Merck's global legal compliance, communications, population health, patient health, and global public policy organizations. Warren joined Merck in 1997, and she has held numerous positions of increasing responsibility within its HR organization. From 2009 to 2011, she was human resources leader for Merck's vaccine organizations. Prior to joining Merck in 1997, she worked for 9 years in HR at Kraft Foods and General Foods. Warren is a member of the board of directors for Grandview Health, the CEB Diversity and Inclusion Working Council, and Simmons College School of Management's Business Advisory Council. She has been honored with many awards, including National Diversity Council's Most Powerful and Influential Women of Pennsylvania, one of 21 leaders for the 21st century, and Diversity Global's 2017 Influential Women in Global Diversity. Warren attended the University of Kentucky, where she earned a BS, and she also earned an MS from Carnegie Mellon University. Welcome to Celeste. Thank you. And last but not least, we have Yvonne Garcia. Yvonne is an SVP and the Global Head of Client Solutions and PMO at State Street Corporation. In this role, she develops solutions for Fortune 100 companies in the financial sector by delivering superior service to clients and deploying cutting-edge technology and operational processes, and delivering complex consulting engagements for existing and potential State Street clients. Prior to that role, Garcia served as president for their China Construction Bank Strategic Assistance Program. Garcia serves as the chairwoman for the largest Latino professional organization in the country, ALPFA. She is also the co-founding chair of Milagros para Niños, an initiative at Children's Hospital in Boston, which has raised more than $8.2 million in funds for Hispanic children who can't afford medical care. She was selected as one of the top 22 most influential women in Massachusetts by the Boston Business Journal, and just this year was featured in Fortune magazine as number 26 of the top 50 most powerful Latinas in the United States. Garcia earned her MBA from Boston University in finance and is a graduate of the Army ROTC program at Siena College. She also holds a certificate in economics and culture from La Sorbonne in Paris, France, and is fully certified Six Sigma Black Belt. I I must say that when I was asked to serve as the thought leader and moderator of this panel, I was incredibly humbled. As you can tell, these women up here are amazing and have such incredible experiences and will definitely add to our dialogue about working with difficult people. So now I'll tell you a little bit about me. I am an industrial organizational psychology practitioner and workplace expert. I help employees and employers get along better. I help to reduce conflict in the workplace, and I help to minimize difficult situations, improve workplace satisfaction, overall morale. And the way that I do that is by going into companies and helping to figure out the root cause of why there is difficulty. Working with Difficult People, the book, is something that's near and dear to my heart. It's actually a revision and modernization of a book that my grandmother wrote over 25 years ago. She was my mentor and encouraged me to go into the field of industrial psychology. I was actually considering going into either clinical psychology or law. And back when we used to read paper newspapers, she cut out a clipping and handed it to me and said, "Amy, look at this field." And industrial organizational psychology deals with time management and goal setting, and again, helping employees and employers to have better relationships so that we can really get what we want and need from the people we work with within organizations. So I realized that my grandmother's book was still selling all of these years later. She sadly passed away a number of years ago. But I approached the book publisher and asked if I might revise and modernize the content of the book, because so much of it still held true even in today's modern environment. And I'm grateful that they said yes. And the book came out in December, and it's been a lot of fun adding to her legacy and a very special thing that I was able to do to contribute to someone who is so special to me. So we'll be talking with... We'll be talking about various scenarios and how we deal with different types of difficult people. And we'll also, by the way, have time for you guys to come and ask questions. So please have some of those ready as well. But before we delve in, I'd like to share a little bit of my experience as a speaker and consultant with regard to this very important topic. And there are three key things that I think you can apply when interacting with any difficult person in the workplace. When I go in as a consultant, a lot of times people say to me, "You know, she's not my friend. She doesn't like me. He's not being nice to me." I'd like to first ask you guys, show of hands, how many real friends, you can point with your fingers, do you have in the workplace? Okay, I see three, two. So I think that we need to accept the fact that our friends are oftentimes separate from our friendly individuals we encounter in the workplace. So we think about our friends and what I like to call our friendlies. If we are able to accept that more likely than not, we don't really have any friends at work, aside from maybe a couple, once we can do that, then we don't get as upset or offended or angry when they don't behave the way we'd hope they would. And we also take some of that pressure off of ourselves to act as a friend to people we most likely don't want to interact with in that way.
Open the affair.
All right.
Okay.
Are we good? Nice diversion. Okay, so we've got our friends, and then we have our friendlies. How do you know if someone's a friend at work? Would you hang out with them? Would you? And I still hear something. Hang tight. Water break.
I'm working with difficult technology.
Good morning, everyone.
We get to hear somebody else.
I don't know how many of you like morning sex.
Okay. Hello.
Yep.
Okay.
I'm going to the other panel. All right, I'm glad we're back on. So how many of you like morning sex? I was turning bright red just standing here. Oh, my word. Sounded very interesting. Also, I learned something. Intimacy is into me see. That was awesome. Very good. I'm taking that home to my husband. I like that. Okay. So we were talking about friends versus friendlies. So again, are you going to take someone home to your home to have a barbecue or go out for cocktails if you were no longer in that organization or if you were no longer in your industry? If the answer is yes, and again, you might have a couple, then those are your friends. More likely than not, you are dealing with people who I place in the friendly category. So in your friendly category, all you're looking for is for someone to be kind, sociable, considerate, respond to an email, hold the door open for you. When you can just recognize that more likely than not, the individuals you're speaking with and interacting with on a daily basis at work really are your friendlies and not your friends, you're able to disconnect a bit more and not get as easily upset and offended. Number one. Number two, that actually friendly concept leads into the most important takeaway, which is very difficult to do. And that is take emotion out of the situation. When you get upset and very angry because this person said this and that person did that, oh, I'm so upset because she didn't respond to my email. Oh, I'm so upset because she impacted me here. I'm so upset because she interrupted me during the conference. When you can stop the upsetness and instead very clearly and directly say, what is the cause? Why am I truly upset? Not the symptom, the cause. Take the emotion away. Be practical. And say, the cause is, I wish she would reply to my email more regularly because when she does that, then I can respond to my customer or my client or the other person I'm working with. So when we're able to do that and take emotion away, then we can set up appropriate policies, protocols, speak to the right person to fix the problem. Remember that you should have friendlies instead of friends. Remember that we should do our best to take emotion out of the situation. And also, I'm a huge proponent of interacting face-to-face, much like we're doing today. When you have a problem with someone and you're mad, whether it be personal or professional, do you run to have that interaction in person or do you text or email? Most people prefer to text or email because they don't want to have that interaction. I encourage you to do so face-to-face or by phone if possible. Once you have the negotiation, once you get through the tough statements or comments, once you share how upset you are because the person did X, Y, and Z and how you would like to practically fix it by taking emotion out of the situation with your friendly, send an email. Use technology to help you to create an electronic paper trail to remind everyone involved what you agreed to. An electronic paper trail is a way to use technology to help us so that we can best get what we want and need from those difficult people in our lives. So without further ado, thank you for your patience. And I still keep thinking about morning sex. I am going to sit down and join the panel. Oh, you know what? Can I use this now? Morning sex, my goodness. Okay, so Alice. How is body language used to manipulate people?
Your mic's not working.
My mic is not working? I'm happy to hold a handheld if you'd like.
Is mine, right. Is mine working?
Yes.
Check one, two, check.
All right, thank you. Alice, how is body language used to manipulate people? Can you hear me? No?
Okay. Alice, why don't you repeat the question?
It was supposed to be conversational.
Can you hear me?
Yeah.
I can repeat the question. The question is, how is body language used to manipulate others? So I think it'd be interesting if you just looked on YouTube and looked up body language, and you'll get hundreds, maybe even thousands of hints. Even to the point of like something like, how do you sell ice cream in Alaska in the winter? How do you find a mate? What do you need to do physically to be attractive to that person? I think the word manipulate is interesting because there's like the word facilitate, and there's the word, there's actually a word called facipulate. Have you heard that word? Facipulation, interesting one. And then there's manipulate. In body language, it's really hard to fake it. I'll just let you know that. Because the body doesn't lie. It's hard to make it lie. It's hard to do a movement, an eye contact, a gesture that doesn't feel authentic to you. So the problem with it is the listener maybe feels that's a little robotic. That's not congruent with your words. And what ends up happening is if you actually get caught that that's not really you, you will not be happy with the results that you get. So I'm just going to show you a little thing. I would like you to show me, everybody all the way to the back, a fake smile. Would you do a fake smile for me, please? Let's see them, they're fake. Turn to the person next to you with that fake smile. Right? So here's the interesting thing about just a fact with body language. If the eyes are not twinkling and wrinkling, it's not a smile. They're connected. So if you're trying to fake a smile, it's pretty obvious to people. It's just hard to do. This is what I would say about manipulation of body language. It's actually your intent that matters more than anything. What is my intention? If my intention is to fake or sort of put on and manipulate through my body language, a lot of times it implies that I want something from you for my benefit. If you're really working at more authentic body language, it's really about the other. What can I help you with? What is your intention? Your intention, hopefully with integrity. Then the body language that you might be using, and even if you've gotten some hints from books or people or classes, it's grounded in that honesty. And the beautiful thing is, you actually do start to get results. The byproduct is perhaps you'll get what you wanted in the first place, but you're not getting it through some kind of artificial means. That's what I would say. Manipulation generally has a covert purpose to it. I want you to do something for me. Do I have time for an example? One little one?
Sure.
Okay, years ago, I went to get a little car. I was 30, and I wanted this little sports car. I won't name the brand because I've never gone back. But anyway, I wanted this car, and there was a young man there, and he was very polite, and he showed me the car, and it had, it's like a convertible. And the weird thing was you had to actually lift the top off, and I wasn't strong enough. I couldn't lift it. So I said to him, this nice, polite man, I think the car's not for me. It's not what I'm looking for. And he literally did this. Lady, please buy the car. I haven't sold one car all summer. I'm in college. This was the position. Okay. I don't think I need to talk with you much about what his intention really was. It was sort of about manipulating me to buy the car. And then when I wouldn't, his true self came through. Well, of course, I not only didn't buy the car, I never went back to that dealership, and I never will look at that kind of car again. That was like 30 years ago. Because the actual underlying intention came through, which was to manipulate me to buy it. So I would stick with what's my intention in this encounter, and how can I best create a great relationship with this person, this client, this company, to help them with what they need. That would be what I would say.
Thank you. Celeste, can you all hear me?
Yes.
Good. You believe that when dealing with difficult people, the punishment should fit the crime. What do you mean by this statement?
Well, did everyone hear that in the back?
Okay. So I've been in human resources now for many years. Numerous times I've had people come into my office after what they consider a very bad encounter with a coworker. And one of the first things that they'll say is, well, I was in a meeting and this individual was just horrible. And I'll ask the question, as we do, you know, trying to get to the underlying cause, well, what happened? Well, they didn't agree with me. So I then have to counsel the person around disagreement in the workplace is not something that means that the person's being difficult. And when you ask all the underlying questions. And so when I say the punishment should fit the crime, understand what's going on with the other person that you're encountered. If diverse perspectives and thoughts are what fuel creativity in a workplace. If someone doesn't agree with your idea, et cetera. But what I always tell them is, don't always assume that they're out to get you. And so when you're thinking about what you're going to do in your head to their car, their office, their dog, just think through the issue and think through and say, okay, well, what is the intent? And then ask questions. Ask subsequent questions to really get at the underlying issue as to why they disagreed with you. So that's what I mean by the punishment of the crime. I've had numerous counseling sessions where an individual has, and described by other people in the room, gone off the deep end with something they perceived was an open attack to them. And it's not. And so, you know, be able to recognize something that is simply a disagreement. I don't agree with your opinion. I don't agree with how you responded to this particular issue in a work setting. And then also, if it's not that serious, then really address it as adults, as we're all adults in the workplace, with the individual. If it's something that's more serious, then you can take on additional coping mechanisms. But don't always just assume that it's something that they're trying to go after you or trying to get you. Assume good intent first, and then work through the other stages.
That's a really great point, because a lot of times when I am consulting, I find that both sides...
No, like...
That's a great point! Can you hear me now? Okay. What I was saying is that is a really great point, because when I oftentimes go into consult with individuals within an organization, both parties sometimes aren't willingly entering the conflict. So we can't always think that they're trying to be out to get us. We should, you know, follow Celeste's suggestion and hope for the best, and then obviously be brave and ready to handle if it is indeed a negative situation. But oftentimes using that positive language and that positive approach can help us to get what we want and need. Okay, Yvonne, you've been known to say, kill them with kindness and keep life in perspective. What do you mean by that, and how have you navigated working with difficult people throughout your career?
Thanks, Amy. I really feel that every human being behaves a certain way because of some past experience, right? So, and going far back, some as, you know, childhood years, or relationships they're in. So I'd like to believe that at the core, people generally mean well and are good people. And I always remind myself that when dealing with someone that is not as pleasant at work. So I remember working for an organization and the head of advertising was just awful. And every time somebody left her office, they were in tears, including my team. And it became my personal mission to break her down. It's like, you know, and she would try to make me cry too, and you know, I cried once. But but you know, I said, what is wrong with this woman? How can she really be that mean? I mean, she had kids. She can't treat her kids that way. So I started to, for Mother's Day, I bought her a card and I left it on her desk. Then one day I bought her a sunflower and I would leave her little notes, hope you're having a good day today. And it didn't really change anything. But one day I said, you know, so-and-so, you know, can we go out to lunch? And I took her out, and little by little, she started to open up. And I was pestering her, right? I was probably, she probably just wanted to get rid of me because I was always trying to, you know, do nice things and talk to her. You know, fast forward a year later, I found out she was in a domestic violence situation. She had struggled with weight gain and had multiple surgeries that didn't work. And in her mind, her life was falling apart. And so I actually felt sorry for her. And you know, then little by little, I started explaining to her, you know, I understand you're going through all of this, but do you realize your behavior at work and how it comes across? Now, I must admit, I don't have the patience, as I'm a little older now in my career, to buy the sunflowers and to write the cards. And I have become, as I've become more confident, I've become more direct. The other approach that I do is I do take them out and to a non-work environment and have a conversation. There was a gentleman that had words to say about my team. And it's amazing how people really struggle when you approach them about something that they're doing or not doing. Right? It gets very awkward. And I always find that has always fixed it. When I said, you know, I heard you saying this about my team as leaders, and I always say as leaders, and quite frankly, I didn't really think this gentleman was a leader, but I made him feel as one because then he's like, oh, I'm a leader. She thinks I'm a leader. I'm like, you're not, but I'm just saying this because you need to, like, so as leaders, we really need to show the team that we're working together. And if there's something that you need fixed, and, you know, I'm open to hearing what you feel about my team and how you feel about them, but I need to know. I don't want to hear it from others. And you know what? It worked. First of all, they become very uncomfortable because you're approaching them about something that they know they did. And their body language completely gets, you know, defensive. But then when you start saying, you know, we're leaders and, you know, really respect what you do and what your team does, want to learn how to work together, you kind of break them down. And I have noticed a change in behavior. And then in terms of keeping life in perspective, you know, a lot of this is just noise to me. You know, I go into work and I have an objective, I have goals to meet, and I want my team to meet those goals with me. And I want them to believe in the same mission that I do. And that's how we end up becoming a strong team, and we work as a family. When you hear he said, she said, or this one's having a bad day, like, they'll get over it. And you know what, and either, I always say never leave over a bad manager. Eventually they will be, you know, they will be on their way, not by their choice. But when you really look at your career and you look at your long-term career and you look at all the organizations you worked for, like little bullet points on this roadmap, most of these folks are irrelevant, right? I don't even remember the woman's name that I just told you about. You know, she means nothing to me today. I hope she's doing well. I hope, you know, everything's worked out for her. But you really do need to keep life in perspective. When Amy talked about the children's hospital thing that I started, you know, part of the donor program is we take a tour of the hospital. And you walk around the ICU and you see these children that have these babies, you know, that maybe have a week or 2 weeks to live, and their parents are sitting by their crib with a smile on their face. And I remember asking this Puerto Rican nurse, Maria, I said, Maria, how could they be smiling when they know that their child is terminally ill? And she said, they're just happy to have another day with their baby. And like, you know, then I think back at work and a memo goes out the wrong way or someone gave you attitude and you go home crying. Like, keep life in perspective. Life is too short. You know, just focus on what it is that you need to do to do your job the best ability that you can and to bring your team along and pave the way for others. So.
Alice, are there specific nonverbal behaviors in difficult people, like in bullies, that we can learn to read?
Can you repeat that? The mic's still not working.
Go ahead, Alice.
Can I repeat it?
Sure.
Are there any specific
nonverbal behaviors in
of
difficult people,
particularly bullies,
that you can learn to read?
You can learn to read, yes. Well, I appreciate what you were saying about childhood and upbringing, because let's just stay with a bully for a few moments.
They can't hear you.
Hello? How's that? Can you hear me now? I feel like a commercial.
Maybe just hold it.
How about here? Can you hear me now?
Yes.
Okay. So I was appreciating what you were saying about these behaviors often coming from our childhood and our upbringing. And you can pretty much, you know, you can pretty much be guaranteed that someone who's coming off as a bully is a very insecure person. And how they feel whole is to hurt somebody, to put you down. And sadly, it could even be cruel, that put down, because the more the aggression towards you, the better that person feels, which is really unfortunate and has its roots probably way back before you ever met them. Now, we all experience them, and today I get this a lot, that there's probably some increase in colleagues or employees that are acting out in a bullish way. So I'm just going to stay with the body language part. So what I would say to you is, these are a few things to look for. The sound of the walk in a bully is louder and harsher. So you can almost hear when they're coming into a room if they're in an aggressive mood. The other is the shoulders are forward. Can you all do that for a moment? Just your shoulders are forward, and let's try this. Pointing is one of them. So there's a little bit of that. It's a little bit like critical parent. You know, and then maybe they're not doing this, but boy, if they could, they would. Finger jab. And the gnarled face. You know, like snarky. Snarky, pointed, forward of the axis. So far, forward of the axis of the body. So this is sort of a neutral position. If I come forward a little bit, it could be quite warm. But if I keep coming, I'm in your space. So it's in the space, in your face, pointing, loud walking oftentimes, and then comes whatever they say, what comes out of their mouth. What can you do besides for maybe understanding that this has little to do with me, it's their history, and I happen to be the brunt of it right now? Let me talk about four responses. Well, you say that to me, I'm saying that to you. So bully to bully. Two rams hitting heads, doesn't go very far, gets repeated. The other is, you bully me, oh God, that's scary. I may not say it, but I cringe, I collapse, I get scared. I can almost feel it physically when this happens, and my voice may even get softer in those moments. So, I would say, let's move from those two and go to these two whenever possible. Take a stand or move out of the way. So here's one move out of the way that maybe many of you remember. George Bush was doing a talk one time, and somebody way from the back with a lot of velocity and power threw a shoe at him. Mm-hmm. You remember? Mm-hmm. You know what he did? And you know, he just kept talking. Amazing. That's a little bit of a physical thing where he did that. So like, how can you emotionally, physically do that? The fourth way is that you take a stand. So here's another example. In the recent debates, presidential debates, there was a debate where Hillary Clinton had something going on behind her. Politics aside, it was just happening. It was movement. And the other candidate was moving behind her in a kind of a threatening way. Do you remember what she did? She just kept talking. She held her ground. She looked at the person she was asked a question by in the town hall. She finished her question. When she went home, she talked about it being a little scary, a little frightening, menacing, but you know what? She held her ground. She held her ground posturally. If you take a look at that video, it's pretty amazing. She just stood and delivered. Again, politics aside. I like to think of these kind of connections as kind of like a body language Aikido. Do you know what Aikido is? Aikido or Tai Chi, you kind of take the energy of that person, kind of work with it, and you find your way, either by moving out of the way and let them live with their crap, or you find some way that you can take a stand. One of the ways to take a stand and to find your way out of it is how you hold yourself. So there's like what's called a neutral position in body language. And that neutral position is, I'm not coming too forward. I'm not doing this. Not leaning back. I'm not bullying forward. I'm actually neutral. I call it 12 o'clock on the clock. So can you just picture that right near you is a 12 o'clock? Okay, come towards what would be 1 o'clock, would be a little bit forward. Can you all come a little bit forward toward me? Yeah, you know, a little bit forward is very pleasant for many people. You're with me, you care about me. You do this with your friends and family, you come forward. Look at people at dinner that are friends. They're leaning in. But when you're faced with a bully, my suggestion would be, I'm at 12 o'clock. I'm not collapsing. I'm not moving too forward. I'm not moving back. I'm right here. Here's another hint. Where's your energy in your body? Is it up? Watch this. I was sharing with a group this morning, if we all saw something very horrible outside the door, you wouldn't go, wow, that's really terrible. You would go, okay, this is what you want to avoid with a bully. Neutral. Calm. I'll give you one more hint about the sitting. Where your coccyx bone is, do you know where that is? Tailbone. Can you picture it right now? Can you picture that little tailbone? Because we're going to drop it down in the chair. Downward is relaxed. You ready? Here we go. 1, 2, 3, drop. Sit in a chair. Feel your bone, let the coccyx bone go down. You all feel, how many felt something? Yeah. Okay, because this is a more relaxed position. When that person is bullying you, I can tell you they're not down. They're here. Up. So sit down in your seat. Find your balance. Listen. Try to move out of the way. If you need to make a statement, find the statement. Take a stand. And the last thing is, both of you are saying, it's not your issue. 95% of the time. So if it's not, why do you need to waste that energy? Because it won't matter 5 years from now, right? Now, I just one thing, I'm not talking about a bully that is hurting you at work. This is a whole different thing. Mm-hmm. You could be having somebody that is intentionally trying to hurt you. That's a whole different story. That requires reporting, talking to your superiors, letting them know what's happening. And I think you all know when it's threatening. When it goes beyond bullying and it moves to threat. That's what I would say. How many of you have experienced bullies in the workplace? That's a lot.
Thank you, Alice. I do, by the way, also encourage you. Can you hear me? No. Okay. Now?
No. Once they're users.
Okay. I encourage you. Thank you. I encourage you to practice statements at home. Video yourself. You know, if it's a colleague and they're annoying you and they're interrupting you in a meeting, thank you, I didn't ask for your opinion, and move on. You use the same body language, use that same body language approach. Thank you, I didn't ask for your opinion. Next. It's so effective, it's not rude, it's not mean, it's friendly, but it gets the job done. All right, let's move to the next question. Celeste. What was the biggest mistake that you made in dealing with a difficult person? How did it turn out, and what did you learn from it?
I wasn't always the polished person that you see up in front of you. I was young. I was starting out in my career, and I was in a meeting with my boss, who was a male, and three or four other males. And I was in the training and development function at the time. And we were sitting, there was no table in between us. So we were sitting in sort of like a horseshoe, five or six people. And I was the only female in the room. And so I was asking questions, my boss was asking questions of these individuals. When my boss would ask questions, they would look him in the eye and they would respond to him. When I would ask a question, and I didn't ask a lot because I had just started with this organization, but when I would ask a question, they would not look at me. They would look at my boss and they'd answer the question, my question, but they'd be addressing my boss. And so I was in my mid-20s or so, maybe late 20s, and I became extremely frustrated the third and the fourth time that they did this. And so I overreacted. What I did was I took my chair, and when this happened again, and the individual still addressed my boss and didn't address me when I asked the question, I took my chair and I moved it in front of my boss. And I stayed there. So it was an overreaction, needless to say. And so what happened, the individual who I did this to literally got scared. And he was visibly upset that I had done that. But I think it called the attention to the fact of what he was doing. And it wasn't even unconscious bias. It had to have been conscious because he did it 4, 5, 6 times. And so afterwards, when I moved my chair back, when my boss told me to move my chair back, we talked about it after the meeting, my boss and I. And he was the type of person that, very understanding, great boss, very aware of what was happening. And I asked him, I said, you know, that was so rude what he was doing to me, and it was so disrespectful. And he said, Celeste, you're absolutely right, it was. He said, but you know, there's a way that you deal with things in a corporate setting where you don't overreact in that way. And he said, you'll learn, you're young, you'll learn. And so we had a good discussion, and it was a good teaching moment for me. It was an even better teaching moment for that individual, I believe. But I learned a lot, and I learned not to overreact and to basically do some of the same things in subsequent meetings with the same individual. He had the nerve to do it again in another meeting, and this time I just addressed it head on, and I said, excuse me, I would really appreciate it if you could look at me when you're answering my question. It is my question, and I'm really concerned about the fact that you're not looking at me, because I'm wondering if you're telling me the truth. And I just basically had that dialogue with him in the room. It was a small meeting again, 3 or 4 people. But he stopped it after that. But it was a learning experience for me. And good thing I had a boss who was providing feedback in the moment and helping me to grow as a professional.
Thank you. Yvonne?
Can you hear me?
No.
She'll repeat.
Yvonne. When working abroad and working with individuals from different cultural backgrounds, did you have to adjust your style or how you did business?
Sure. It wasn't necessarily adjusting my style. It was educating myself on traditions, mannerisms inside boardrooms, how decisions were made. So I went back and forth to China for 1.5 years when I was at Bank of America, and we went through a training program on how to hand out a business card, what it meant depending on what side of the room you would sit at, and how decisions were made. And we basically, you know, when we got there, everyone was kind of freaking out, like, oh my God, did I do that right? And, you know, and wait, am I showing the bottom of my shoe? I'm like, no, that's the Middle East, we're in China. You know, so everyone was kind of nervous about what do I do, what do I say, where do I sit? And I don't know if it's my culture as a Hispanic, as a Latina, you know, it was, I just kind of like, they're human, right? They eat, they have 2 eyes, they have 5, you know, 10 fingers, they want what we want. They want to do well at their job. They want to make sure the project is successful. They were very, you know, welcoming to us. So essentially, when I got there, I just treated them with respect, and I was curious about their traditions. I embraced their traditions. I ate everything, some of it dead, some of it not. And it was great, you know, and I made some lifelong friends there. I knew enough not to, when I was there, the one-child policy was active, so I knew not to ask them how many kids they had, because for the most part, most of them just had one. So you just become aware of some of the traditions and sensitive points of any culture that you're going to work in, and and respect what they do. And at the end of the day, we were like a family. They had overheard, I had missed my son's first birthday on my first trip out there, and they overheard me tell one of my coworkers, and the next day when I walked into the room, they had a cake with the number one candle on it, and they sung happy birthday. And you know, and my the team that came from the States with me, like, wow, they're really nice. Like, yeah, Chinese people can be nice, you know. Mm-hmm. I'm like, gee, you know, they're human. Like, we're all human. So it really is kind of simple. It's just appreciating people for who they are at the core and understanding that no matter what part of the world you are, what part of the globe you live in, it's we all want the same thing. Yeah.
I'm using both. Okay. By the way, that was a great way for us to wrap up our questions and now open it up for you guys for the Q&A part. So if you have any questions, please go stand at the microphone. There are places in the various aisles. And we are here. Can you hear me? No.
I think we went over, so people are going to the next session.
They just went.
Yeah.
Okay, so if you have any questions, you're welcome to come up to the microphones, and we're happy to answer them.
Amy, you know what it is? It's 11:15, and I think the next session went over. Yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
They can just come talk to us in person.
Okay. All right. Thank you guys so much. Thank you.